Are you a financial advisor considering the Independent Registered Investment Advisor, or RIA, model and wondering where to start? Start with Schwab Advisor Services. Schwab has helped thousands evaluate the full range of options and can help you determine your best path forward. Navigate the big and small decisions by tapping into Schwab's decades worth of insights on what fuels RIA success. With Schwab Advisor Services, you have a custodian that will support you every step of the way. Start your journey today at advisorservices.schwab.com/paths.
Axis Mundi.
Welcome to One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew L. Seidel, a constitutional attorney and the author of The Founding Myth and American Crusade. This is a podcast about religion, the law, and the battle for America's soul. We'll be separating church and state, defending freedom and equality, and fighting Christian nationalism. If you haven't already, sign up for our weekly bonus content and ad-free listening at accessmundi.us. LFG, folks. I am at the end of a long 2 weeks. The organization I work for, my day job, is at Americans United for Separation of Church and State. I do this podcast on the side, on my own time and my own dime. Just got finished hosting the Summit for Religious Freedom. This is the third year that we have done this remarkable event. It really is one of the most amazing conferences that I have ever been a part of. Conference really isn't the right word. Summit is definitely a better word. The goal is to build a big coalition to win the fight to separate church and state for people of all religions and none, of which there were many at this conference. It's a really vibrant spectrum of everything you can imagine, from age, across the gender spectrum, LGBTQ spectrum, belief spectrum, right? I'm an atheist, and I was on stage with a Baptist reverend, Doug Alviles Bernal, and a deconstructing Christian, April Ajoy, for this far-ranging panel discussion. Dr. Jamar Tisby explored white Christian nationalism and how it conflicts with the Black church. And then there was another great panel discussion with Rachel Lazar, CEO of AU, after that. Randy Weingarten, the president of the American Federation of Teachers, was there to give this speech that kind of brought down the house. People were really, really excited about it. There's all these amazing breakout panels. There's tons of local organizers there. You know, I got to see Will Judy from Secular Houston, and Evan Clark from Atheist United, and Sarah Levin from Secular Strategies, and Kevin Bowling from Secular Student Alliance. So many amazing folks there. The Reverend Lori Walkie, who is kicking ass in high heels in Oklahoma. She's a plaintiff in a couple of lawsuits out there, very outspoken defender of the separation of church and state, was at the summit and joined us on the Hill for Hill Day. Truly remarkable person. Selena Fox, a Wiccan priestess, was there. We had all these amazing youth activists like Dane and Aiden and Tatiana and Leland and so many more who I'm not mentioning. We had all of these media partners that were there, and content creators and influencers like Monty Mader and Tim Whitaker of the New Evangelicals, and of course, April Ajoy. But it's not just the people that are there in this amazing community that you're building, though that is incredibly important. We also had an organizing institute, which was something that we did for the first time this year. It kicked off the summit, and it was this interactive, hands-on training to help people build the knowledge and skills that they need to go out and advocate for church-state separation in their communities. And it was our first year of doing something like that. We had a really exciting new format for Hill Day to go lobby, which a lot of people were skeptical of, but those skeptics were converts by the end. They were really excited. People who had been lobbying for a number of years were telling me on the bus ride back that this was the way to do it, that it was really fun and effective, and it felt different, and it felt like they were coming into their own with the power. Jamar Tisby and Tim Whitaker went out of their way to talk about how empowering this Hill Day felt. And of course, we had members of Congress come and speak to the folks, including Jamie Raskin and Steve Cohen. And look, I am barely scratching the surface here. I didn't even mean to talk about surf. Really, all I was saying is that I'm coming off of a very long 2 weeks. And if you missed surf, don't miss it next year. Visit thesrf.org. It's got all the info. We have the dates for next year up, and it's going to be bigger and better every single year. And trust me, this is worth your time. But really, this also meant that, of course, that Liz, who joined me on the Catholic Charities episode, was home solo parenting for quite a while. And I just want to thank all of you, and there were a lot of you, who reached out and shared how much you enjoyed the episode with Liz on the Catholic Charities case. For those of you who might have missed that, Liz is my wife. She is also an attorney in the church state fight. She's my significantly better half. Some of you reached out already asking, hey, you got to get her back on another episode. Some of you reached out saying, hey, she should replace you as host. I agree with all of those things. I really wanted that episode to be like you were eavesdropping in on our dinner conversations, you know, on our getting ready for bed conversations. I wanted it to be kind of the insight into how we really see this court, with a little bit of sort of the walls down on that conversation, so that you could really just eavesdrop. And if you enjoyed it, I want to let you know that there definitely will be more. I'm going to have Liz back on if she will deign to join us. But if you really enjoyed it and want to get more of that, Liz and I are going to be joining the Free Thought Cruise in March 2026 as speakers. So this is a cruise where like 100 free thinkers get on a boat and cruise the Caribbean together, the Free Thought Cruise. So it's a week on the high seas. It's 7 days of spirited conversations and fresh ocean air and beautiful sunsets and probably a drink or two and making new friends under the Caribbean sun. My undergrad study abroad was on semester at sea. Sail the boat around the world. So I am very excited for this. And if this sounds like something you're into, visit freethoughtcruise.com for all the details. But it's March 14th through the 21st, 2026. In the Caribbean, I think we start in Miami. We go to Cozumel, Roatan, Harvest Cay, Costa Maya. Liz and I will each be doing a couple presentations on the two at-sea days. This is on the Norwegian Encore. But we'll also just be hanging out. You know, you might get to sit at our dinner table and overhear us talk about one of these cases or what's going on and hear our thoughts. So that's freethoughtcruise.com, and it's where reason meets the high seas. Now, the Summit for Religious Freedom took place on dry land. And again, it was amazing. But really, all of this is leading up to me saying that after the summit, I had another opportunity. And this is what I want to talk with you about and share with you about today. Representative Jared Huffman, who some of you may know, co-founded the Congressional Freethought Caucus, had reached out to me and asked if I could brief the Congressional Freethought Caucus and its staffers on our secular constitution and the misinformation that Christian nationalists use to undermine church-state separation. So that briefing happened the day after the Summit for Religious Freedom. So, you know, quite the week. There were other reps from some of the other secular groups who were there, and I brought along the Reverend Brian Kaler. If you don't know Brian Kaler is a historian, a Baptist minister. He's got a PhD in political communication. He's got a really great new book that I would recommend everybody check out called Baptizing America. And it sort of talks about, and this is one of the reasons I wanted him in the room, how mainline Christians need to take some ownership for Christian nationalism. And he goes goes over some of the history. So if you like the founding myth, I do think you'll enjoy some of the history in baptizing America. He is president and editor-in-chief of Word and Way. He did some really great work debunking the fake Thomas Jefferson prayer that Mike Johnson used a few months ago, and he actually traced the genesis of that fakery. It was originally a fake George Washington prayer. And then in the 1950s and then into the 60s, it became popularized as a fake Thomas Jefferson prayer. Really interesting stuff that Brian has done. So I wanted him in the room with me when I found out this was going to be happening right after Surfs. So Brian and I had this amazing, far-reaching conversation with members of Congress and their staff. And they asked us about the Constitution and textualism and originalism and the historical disinformation and how Christian nationalism perpetuates it and what are the sources for book recommendations and a lot more. And obviously, we didn't record this, but I have pieced together some of what I've said and I want to share it with you. And specifically, I want to share with you how I opened when Representative Huffman kicked it to me. Because I think one of the things that we have to do a much better job of in this fight is making the separation of church and state patriotic, because it is. And here is how I began. The wall of separation between church and state is an American original. It's an American invention. The idea was born in the Enlightenment, but it was first implemented in the American experiment. Until then, no other nation in the history of the world had sought to protect the ability of its citizens to think freely by separating religion and government. We should be proud of that. And we shouldn't let people undermine it with myths, with historical disinformation about being founded as a Christian nation. Most of the truly unique and original elements of our Constitution are secular. Our Constitution was the first to declare that power comes from people, not gods. The words "we the people" are poetic, but also so much more. They are a declaration of power. Self-government is quite literally impossible if power flows from the divine, but it's natural when power flows from the people. Our Constitution was the first governing document not to mention a god or deity. And it's godless by choice, not by accident. Some people in the founding generation objected to that choice. They were pissed off about it. And there have been movements across our history to rewrite our Constitution, especially the preamble, to add Jesus and to minimize the people. None of those have succeeded, unless you count the Confederate States of America seceding and adding Jesus to their preamble of their Constitution. Boo. Our Constitution was the first to ban religious tests for public office in Article 6. This was the only mention of religion in the original unamended document. And this ban has some of the most clear, emphatic language in a document that is often deliberately vague. No religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust. No, shall, ever, any. Right? These are clear commands. And if you remember back to your high school civics or government classes, you remember that the Constitution was an outline and later generations were going to come along and define things more clearly. But not this, not the ban on religious tests, not the declaration of power from the people, not the fact that God is not mentioned in the Constitution, and certainly not that ban, no shall ever any. But all of that was still not enough. That's all in the original, unamended Constitution. The separation of church and state is woven into the fabric of our Constitution. Right? All of those are really important parts of our Constitution, but still that wasn't enough. They wanted more. And so we got the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Those six rights, a secular government, religious freedom, speech, press, assembly, petition, all of those bolster our right to think freely, to believe freely. So the separation of church and state predates the First Amendment. And it's not simply in one half of one clause of the First Amendment. It's everywhere. It's omnipresent. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Gary Wills put it nicely, quote, "We invented nothing except disestablishment. No other government in history had launched itself without help of officially recognized gods and their state-connected ministers." The separation of church and state is an American invention, and that, my friends, is the true legacy of America. That's what guarantees every one of us in this country the freedom to live as ourselves and believe as we choose so long as we don't harm others. That separation is our only guarantee for true religious liberty, and it's one of the best guarantees for freedom of thought. And as a constitutional attorney, I will be the first to tell you that there is a lot that is wrong with our Constitution, a whole lot. There are many aspirational values written into it that we have yet to live up to. But those secular foundations are what made it unique, and they are genuine contributions, not only to political science and thought, but to all humanity. And those contributions are threatened, undermined, and under attack by white Christian nationalism and the lies, myths, and disinformation it spins. Now, this patriotic framing, I'm pausing here, pausing in what I think I said sitting at that table with those members of Congress. This patriotic framing of the separation of church and state is where we need to be, where our movement needs to be, where our country needs to be. It's not anti-religion, which I know may get some of my fellow atheists on their heels, but that's true. The separation of church and state is not anti-religious. It's pro-religious freedom and pro-freedom of thought. It is pro-human. And we need to be in this kind of patriotic framing for this right if we want to win, if we want to secure that separation and thereby those freedoms for all. And I really spent a lot of time talking with the members about this, how this is the true legacy of America, the separation of church and state. Rachel Lazar likes to say that church-state separation is as American as apple pie. Now, the goal of Christian nationalism, of course, is to drag us back to a time when straight, white, conservative Christian men ruled and everybody else was, at best, second-class citizens, but often much worse. And so Christian nationalists have developed this entire labyrinth of historical lies and myths to justify their hateful policies so that they can use the language of return, returning America to God, as Mike Johnson said, or bringing religion back, as Trump has said, or making America great again. Christian nationalism creates this ultimate permission structure, a divine permission structure that can justify nearly anything, from harming other people for who they are or what they believe, to attempting to overturn a free and fair election. Historical disinformation is such a prominent feature of Christian nationalism that for a long time, Christian nationalism was treated as this scholarly debate about our history. Were we founded as a Christian nation? What did the founders believe about this? But that kind of all fell by the wayside on January 6th because Christian nationalism ripped off its mask, showing that it's not a scholarly debate about how America was founded, but a violent exclusionary movement bent on seizing power in the here and now. Historical disinformation is not just a prominent feature of Christian nationalism. Christian nationalism is actually an entire identity based on disinformation. Because again, if you can redefine America and what it means to be an American, according to white Christian nationalist disinformation, reshaping the law becomes pretty easy. And like all good disinformation campaigns, this is both organic and orchestrated. It's coordinated. You can see this in the talking points they employ. We've talked on this pod about how state legislators across the country are citing the Bible and America's, quote, Judeo-Christian founding, or the fact that, quote, we're a Christian nation to justify resolutions asking the Supreme Court to overturn marriage equality, for instance. Bills to put In God We Trust displays and Ten Commandments displays into public schools, or to declare Bible Heritage Week. And these bills are often written or pushed by Christian nationalist groups, or at least pull from those groups' historical disinformation talking points. And in some cases, those bills are pulled right from a Christian nationalist's playbook, something called Project Blitz, which I'm sure some of you remember. Maybe we'll get into one day on this podcast. It was literally a handbook of Christian nationalist bills that legislators could propose, starting off with these seemingly small ceremonial bills leading up to bills that violate the rights of everybody. And it's not just that the bills in the legislation are coordinated, but the disinformation that justifies the moves is also coordinated, right? The same media machine that those members of Congress I was speaking to face every day, that juggernaut that repeats the same lies to audiences across the country, that conservative media dominance that is like wallpaper in most of America, repetitive and everywhere, pushes Christian nationalist lies and myths. Some of you have probably heard of David Barton. David Barton is the granddaddy of Christian nationalist disinformation. He's not a historian. He's not even a pseudo-historian. He's a propagandist. He has no training in history. He attended Oral Roberts University, an uber-conservative Christian college. I think it might even be fair to call it a Christian nationalist college these days. And he got a degree in, not history, but in Christian education. I mean, he's a propagandist. Let's call him what he is. He runs an outfit called Wall Builders, which is a family outfit, and it is dedicated to spreading lies about America being founded as a Christian nation. And many of the talking points that we face today trace back to Barton. If he did not invent them, he at least helped popularize them. And look, this he is, for however wrong he is, and he's very, very wrong, he's also wildly influential. It's almost like an inverse relationship between the percent he gets right versus how influential he is. And the more wrong he is, the more influential he seems to become. And this is the man that Mike Johnson has said, quote, had a profound influence on me and my work and my life and everything I do. That's terrifying. Johnson worked with Barton back in his days at Christian nationalist outfits like First Liberty and the Alliance Defending Freedom. Johnson worked at both of those. And then Johnson also thinks of Tony Perkins as something of a mentor. And Tony Perkins's group was called the Family Research Council. And the Family Research Council, along with David Barton's group, Wall Builders, were two of the three groups that were behind Project Blitz, which I just mentioned. Now, one of their main tactics is to rely on the seemingly minor ceremonial changes that have been imposed on this country during previous waves of Christian nationalism. The modern wave that we are facing draws legitimacy from the scars that have been left behind by previous waves. And two of their favorite things to point to are In God We Trust and One Nation Under God. These tidbits are not historical so much as they are rhetorical. Neither is from the founding era. In God We Trust was first put on our coins in 1864 at the behest of a preacher who wanted to spare us the ignominy of appearing to be a godless nation if we lost the Civil War. And he found in the director of the Mint a man who campaigned to add Jesus to our godless Constitution, helped lead one of those campaigns I mentioned earlier. And Brian Kaler gave a great story related to this, and himself talking as a Baptist clergyman, owning the mistakes of this previous Baptist clergy, which some of the folks in the Freethought Caucus were fascinated by. But really, we were saddled with a lot of this in the 1950s. Thanks for listening to the free version of today's episode. To get the whole conversation, unfiltered and unfettered, sign up at accessmundi.us. Costs less than that latte you bought on the way to work, and I am just as delicious. Signing up also gets you premium content from Straight White American Jesus and other Access Mundi shows. Try it. You can always change your mind because life is too good to waste on bad ideas. This has been One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew Seidel. Until next time.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.